All right, we are at the Welcome to the Theatrical Mustang podcast. I'm Andy. I'm not Katie. Katie is out of commission. She is absolutely sick. So I think she is doing as much resting as possible. But I am here with Hattie Anders.
What up? It's actually Andress.
Andress?
Yeah.
Oh, I always thought it was Anders.
No, but this is like a commonly made mistake.
Yeah.
It's actually really confusing because my name is spelled exactly how it sounds.
Yeah.
But for some reason, everyone mixes it up. But I get Andrews a lot.
Really?
There's no W. So you got all the letters right.
Do you correct people when this goes down, or you just let it fly, depending on who it is?
Depends on the situation.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we're at the Seattle Rep right now.
Ooh.
Where it's kind of cool for me to walk around here because I've only been like an audience member. So me walking around is kind of like, woo, this is crazy. What is your official title been here in this past?
Yes. So my official title for the majority of this year has been artistic/casting intern.
Okay.
I say the slash because when you say it, just artistic casting intern, it implies like that all the other interns aren't artistic or something. But really,
yeah.
What it means is that part of my internship is devoted solely to casting, and then part of it is just a general artistic department internship.
Okay.
Yeah, and now my internship ended like 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And so now I'm here for the next month or so, just doing odd jobs for the casting department and around the theater, and
yeah,
preparing to produce the writers group showcase in June.
Oh, yeah. And who's all involved in that?
That is, so the Seattle Rep a couple years ago started a writers group just as a way to further invest in the local theater community, particularly in playwrights and developing new work.
Yeah.
So there's eight local playwrights, part of the writers group, and they come in on a 2-year rotation. And as it stands now, each year they are asked to write a completely original play.
Cool.
That culminates in some sort of reading at the showcase.
Wow. Yeah. So let's go back. We're at the present. We're gonna go way back.
Great.
Where are you from? Where do you hail from?
I hail from Ballard, Seattle, Washington.
Yeah, Washingtonian.
Yeah,
through and through.
I know people always sound like disappointed when you say that. You know, like you have some exciting story of like how you had your own like Oregon Trail experience.
Yeah.
No, I grew up in Ballard.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the Seattle Center.
Yeah.
Because I grew up at Seattle Children's Theater.
And your parents are creative types, right?
Yes.
You're kind of a part of a legacy of creative people.
Yeah. My dad is a folk musician.
Yes.
And it happens that it is folk life.
And we are in the middle of folk life right now. There's a Pepsi truck parked outside, but there are just hundreds of people swarming the Seattle Center right now.
Yes.
And we've happened to find a quiet little area in the Seattle Rep. So, and what is your dad's a musician?
Yeah, he's a folk musician. He's an accordion player.
Of course.
Which is about as unique as you can get. And he plays piano as well.
Oh, okay.
He is also a classical musician and would play for, like, my middle school musicals growing up.
Oh, really?
Awesome.
Oh, my gosh. That's so insane.
Yeah.
What does your mom do?
My mom's a nurse.
Oh.
Yeah. She's the breadwinner of the family.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But she did not grow up in a family really that was particularly involved in the arts at all. But she and my dad met through the contra dancing scene, which is a thing.
It's a type of the contra dance, like there's a contra dance?
Yeah. Contra dancing. So contra dancing is basically when the Brits came over from England, they brought their line dancing, which then evolved into English country dancing, which is still a thing.
Yeah.
You can go to Folklife and see it. And then, I hope I'm not slaughtering this history, but then we have square dancing,
sure,
which is more like traditional Southern form. And I think at some point, square dancing and English country dancing, which is a line, somehow mixed a little bit, and contra dancing was born.
Wow.
So contra dancing has more of the vibe of square dancing, but it's in a line.
Oh my gosh.
These are all really important things to know.
Well, this is the history that brought up Hattie, you know?
Yeah.
So your parents met doing the contra dancing.
Yeah.
You came along some odd years later.
Yes.
And when were you first involved with this, like, theater thing?
Well, let's see. because of my dad being a musician, we used to go to these folk music camps in the summer,
okay,
which are about as awesome as they sound. And I think when I was 2 going on 3, I got up on stage at one of those, at like a kind of like a show and tell gathering thing, and I sang Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
Wow.
But as the story goes, my dad hit a wrong note towards the beginning, and I stopped singing and looked at him and was like, start over.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
At 2 or 3, yeah, you were demanding that kind of perfection.
Yeah. Young diva in the making. But then I started, when I did creative dance from a young age.
Sure.
And then I think when I was 5, my parents had me start in choir with Pacifica Chorus. That's still going in Seattle.
Yeah.
And I started taking violin lessons.
Oh, wow. You were just all over the place. Yeah. You were doing music, dance, theater.
I was doing it all.
When specifically was it theater? Like, what was the first play?
The first play I was in first grade.
Okay.
I went to a Waldorf school, which is like a artsy, hippie, / European pedagogy.
Sure.
I can't say that. How do you say that word?
Pedagogical?
Pedagogy?
I don't know.
I don't know what the form of the word is that I'm looking for. Anyway, it comes from Europe, the school.
Yeah.
And, but we would do a class play every year.
Sure.
So in first grade, we did the story about the golden goose that everyone tries to, take it because they're greedy, and then they get stuck to it, and there's like the parade through town because everyone's stuck to the goose because they tried to take it.
Yeah.
And I played the little old man who, kind of, gives the wisdom to the poor beggar at some point.
Sure.
And we only had one performance. It was, in our classroom for our parents during the school day. And I had a stick that I used so I could, hobble around.
Yeah.
And in my first entrance, I had to, cross the full stage. But I grabbed the stick too low. So I was, way bent over. My butt was in the air. And I had such bad giggles when I was younger that I started giggling and made the whole class laugh. And everyone, blamed me for ruining our first grade play.
They
were so angry.
But that's oh, my gosh.
It was awesome. And I was I love this.
Yeah.
Let's do more.
Yeah, and was it just pretty much nonstop from there, doing the whole school thing from, elementary to high school?
Yeah, it was really cool because we had it built in at school, and then I think that summer after first grade, I went to a camp called Summer Fun, which is also still going,
okay,
which is like a 3-week camp in Seattle. It's not sleepaway, but it's full day, and you do visual art, music, dance, and acting classes, and then the founders, they would write a original musical every single summer that we would put on and perform.
Whoa.
Yeah. It was amazing.
That's crazy.
So
would
I
you get
started
to be
doing that.
Yeah. Would you get to be involved with the creation of that show at all? Or would people, or were they just kind of see what you were good at and kind of cater to you guys?
Kind of by virtue of working on a new show, you have a hand in it, even if you're 7 and don't understand what that means. But it wasn't devised necessarily.
Sure.
They would write it before and then put it on us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
But they were wacky awesome shows.
Yeah. And how long did you do that for?
Kind of on and off till I think I was 10 or 11.
Mm-hmm.
And then I taught for them for a couple years in high school.
Wow.
Which was really fun. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So it was musicals and plays?
Yeah, musicals and plays. I was still in choir.
Mm-hmm.
Started doing piano. Took a hiatus from dance for a while, played some softball.
Of course. You got to take some time out.
And then I went back to ballet when I was, I think it wasn't until I was 13.
Wow.
And then I started getting more serious about dance.
Mm-hmm. So when did it start setting in for you that this was that this sort of creative side was meant for you, or you wanted to pursue it?
I think because I got really serious about piano,
mm-hmm.
So for a while I thought I maybe wanted to be a concert pianist.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you played any recitals or shows or anything?
No, because I, this is everyone's story, except for the people who are famous musicians.
Lay it on me.
I quit. There were years where I wanted to quit just because, you're a kid and you're I don't want to sit at the piano for an hour practicing every day because you're antsy.
Sure.
And my parents, bless them, were just stay with it, just stay with it. And I had an amazing teacher.
Yeah.
So I loved her. But I think around when I was 15, you know, high school, you start getting too busy. Things. And I quit.
Yeah.
That's the worst.
You just let it go. It's okay.
But I would do, like, like those competition recitals and stuff around town.
What does that mean? No, I don't know. What does that mean, competition recitals? It sounds kind of intense.
There's, like, music conferences, and you go and you play, and you get adjudicated by, like, faculty from University of Washington or something.
Uh-huh.
So you get comments and scores.
Whoa.
And then, like, the top scorers get to go perform again or something.
Sure, sure.
I was never quite that serious.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It was actually extremely nerve-wracking. It was probably the worst, by far the worst stage fright I've ever had in my
really?
Life. Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Well, it's just you up there with a piano, and it's just dead quiet, right?
Yeah.
And just your fingers dancing away.
Yeah, and you have to be memorized, of course. So there's just, like, really nothing to save you. I mean, it makes theater look really easy. There's, like, a million ways to save yourself on stage in theater.
Yeah.
Piano, you're like, well, that was obviously a wrong note,
yep.
And I have this piece of wood and ivory in front of me and nothing else.
That sounds kind of intense.
Yeah.
It's an intense lifestyle.
Yeah. So not for me in the end.
Yeah. So when was it that so you wanted to be the concert pianist? Didn't work out.
Didn't work
15
out.
15-year-old Hattie.
Yeah.
Not hyped on the piano. So
well, so like overlapping with that in middle school, we had our yearly class play, but mm-hmm. then also the middle school grade 6 through 8 together, you could elect to be part of the musical that was produced annually.
Yeah.
So in 6th grade we did Oklahoma.
Okay.
And I was really into that.
Yeah.
And that, I think, was, like, when things first really started clicking in. Like, oh, and, you know, you're at an age where you can start to understand, like, little inklings of the craft that it takes.
Sure.
So,
like you were starting to develop your working style.
Yeah. And, like, starting to understand stage presence
mm-hmm.
and character building. And, like, oh, if I do it this way, I get it, like, a laugh or
yeah.
a reaction. And starting to kind of be able to calculate that.
Yeah.
And
did you have good... That. Did you have teachers who were, like, kind of guiding this
yeah.
for you? Like, did you have good people working with you?
Yeah. Well, actually, the funny thing about the Waldorf school is that it's such an awesome, weird school that it draws a lot of artists' kids. So for our 7th grade musical, or the musical when I was in 7th grade, was The Sound of Music.
Mm-hmm.
And Julie Beckman, who's a local director and adapter, she directed it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I was just like, oh, it's Clara's mom, Julie, directing. You know,
sure.
like, I had no idea. So I was just like, yeah, Julie's awesome. And then looking back, I'm like, whoa, I was super lucky to get
yeah,
to have that.
Yeah.
And then in 8th grade, we did The Pirates of Penzance. I starred as Mabel.
Hey.
And John Kazanjian and Mary Ewald of New City Theater directed because their daughters were at the school as well.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I was just like, John and Mary. And, you know, my parents were like, you know, they're professional theater artists. And I'm like,
yeah.
cool, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And it was like the most wacky, awesome production of Pirates of Penzance ever.
Huh.
And yeah, so I definitely, like, unknowingly to me at the time, had some really awesome people influencing me.
Just working with you and
yeah.
just kind of giving their craft to you.
Yeah.
These, like, veterans
yeah.
of our scene.
Totally.
That's insanity.
And I'm sure, like, maybe that they got paid a little bit, but I'm sure they were, like, volunteering at their kids' school.
Sure.
You know? So it was just, like, that's just where luck and circumstance kicks in.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And you were picking it up and
mm-hmm.
rolling with it.
Yeah. And then at the same time, like, around 4th grade, I started really taking classes at Seattle Children's Theater.
Okay. So you're a part of that crew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was kind of starting to overlap in, and I think when I was, I think in 5th grade, maybe I first auditioned for their summer season.
Mm-hmm.
They used to do, like, 8 shows every summer, all with students, but in their professional theater, the big one, the Charlotte Martin. And so I auditioned, and my first audition, I did some monologue from a monologue book, like, not from a play, a monologue book about poaching elephants. And it was, like, really dramatic.
About poaching elephants?
Yeah.
What were you playing? Like,
some
hunter?
No, I think I was, like, an activist. Like,
oh, okay.
Trying to take
sure.
a stand against it. And I was like, who needs ivory? Or something. But I'm sure it was just so poorly written. And then I sang Maybe from Annie, which...
Oh.
No one should ever sing anything from Annie at an audition. So, like, needless to say, I did not get cast that year.
Yeah.
And I kept taking classes, and, you know, I was doing stuff at school, and then the next year rolled around, and my mom was like, you should audition again. And I was like, okay. Oh, and I didn't get cast, and then I enrolled in, like, a month-long play development thing.
Yeah.
Where Jillian Jorgensen was writing a original play for us, and Jocelyn Marr was in it.
Whoa.
Yeah, so Jocelyn and I go way back, as well as Jillian and I. So when we see each other, it was like a play with really weird birds in it.
Yeah.
That's all any of us remember, and we're always like, ah!
Yeah, that's right. You kind of grew up with, like, a generation of artists that I've gotten to know of, like, growing up here doing theater and also have, like, kind of parents with creative backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Like, like who are some of those people that you grew up with?
Like, Zoe Bellier was a really good friend growing up. So, yeah, we would just, like, go to 1448 and be like, this is cool, whatever, hanging out.
Are you, like, teenagers
at this
point?
Making sandwiches.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Grew up with Sydney Tucker.
Crazy.
All those cool kids.
That's insane.
Yeah.
So, so you're a director as well.
Mm-hmm.
Did you direct in high school at all? Like, did you direct before college?
Yeah. So I, my senior year of high school.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to do something. And Brandon Ivey, who's an awesome director from Seattle, still has, but he's living in New York mostly now, a company called Contemporary Classics.
Mm-hmm.
And that summer, maybe, they had done a production called Xana Don't, which is this, like, awesome, campy, you know, like, off-Broadway musical. And I had seen it, and I just loved it, and, you know, it was about acceptance, and it was kind of, the premise is like an inverted world in terms of sexuality, so where being gay is the norm, and being straight is, you know, which, like, now maybe would be, like, whatever and corny, but we're talking circa 2008,
well, and you're, like, a teenager digging this stuff,
totally.
Right?
Yeah. And, you know, I grew up in liberal Seattle, so I was just kind of starting to really understand that, like, there were many, many places in this country, in the world, and this state where my ideas were not necessarily accepted ones.
Sure.
So I saw Xana Don't, and I was like, ooh, I want to direct that at my school. Because I went to university prep for high school, which was is a fantastic school, but, like, quite preppy, as the name might ensue. And very, very focused on academics, and as it should be. It's a college prep school.
Mm-hmm.
So the theater department was not that big. Anyway, I was like, I'm going to direct Xana Don't. So I got a little bit of money from the school. I, like, applied for a little grant from parent council. And I hounded people to audition for it because there's a number of male roles in it. And there weren't a ton of guys who did theater because they all did sports.
Sure.
So I just hounded a couple people, and I was like, you have to do it.
Yeah.
There were, let's see, you know, I don't think that it's actually, like, indicated in the script, like, for any reason, but maybe because the production I'd seen was cast this way, I really wanted it to not be an entirely white cast. So, I know.
Hattie, you are, like, blowing my mind. You are producing, you are directing, you are politically aware of, like, the situations around you. And
I was getting pretty bad grades at the time, so let's be aware of that.
But at least you had positive energies going into something like this, you know? It's just totally the makeup of, like, I don't know, of you. Like, I just see that happening.
Yeah. So I, like, really worked my butt off. You know, we rehearsed every day after school.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, I got a student to do the choreography, or two students to do the choreography, because there was a lot of it. Student music director, we put the band together, we got designers, you know, we... The set was, like, minimal, but we still had to build things, and I would, like, come in before school, before class started at 8 a.m., and paint. Because we did, like, one coat before we left, and then we were like, that's dry! So we at 7 a.m. And, yeah, it was a wild success.
Wow.
So that was my first foray into directing.
Wow.
But you know what was funny? It really came from a place of, like, just wanting to make something.
Sure.
It wasn't like, I'm going to be a director. Like, yeah. I think my directing brain has always been very director-producer.
Yeah, sure.
So I just wanted to make this thing happen.
What do you remember what kind of inspired that? Were you just kind of over following everybody? Or were you just, yeah. like...
Well, if we back up to earlier in 2008, mm-hmm. A group of friends and I, from the Children's Theater, had kind of felt like we had outgrown the summer season productions there. And we had all done their summer intensive called the Young Actor Institute, which, like, amazing people teach for. Albin Dennis, Rita Giomi, Sheila Daniels, Mariah Z. Kaminsky has taught for it.
Yeah.
Jeff Ulm, you know.
You've had a lot of heavy hitters enter your life.
So we had all been through that, spread out through a couple of years, and we were like, you know, we're ready to go off on our own. Like, so grateful for what the Children's Theater had given us and wanting to build on that. So we founded a company, mm-hmm. The Young American Theater Company.
Yeah.
Now going into its eighth season. Yahtzee, for sure. It was very important to us. We sat there for, like, days. We were like, we need a good acronym.
Yeah.
That's all we really cared about. We came up with an acronym before we came up with a name.
It's important.
So that, we had started that, and we had produced a show at Wet's Old mm-hmm. Space in the summer of 2008. We did Women in Wallace.
Wow.
And also a one act, I think. Yeah, we did two shows that summer. So, like, that, I was the managing director for that company. So I'd been bitten by the producer bug.
Wow.
And, like, seen how if we just decided and, like, said we were going to do something, it took a lot of work, but we could make it happen.
Yeah.
So I think, like, learning that, I was like, then I saw Xana Don't, and I was like, I want to do that at my school. Okay, all I have to say is I'm going to do it and then work my butt off, and it happens.
Yeah. I mean, that drive to make that happen is, like, kind of the difference between, like, I don't know, just, I mean, that's, when you just say, yes, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to take action and move forward with it, like, that's 90% of the battle right there, and then
totally.
Just finding your homies to go to war with you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's, like, it's thrilling, like, that moment where you have this idea, and you're talking to people, and you know that at a certain point, you just... like, nothing's going to happen. You're kind of going to, like, be stuck in the hamster wheel.
Yeah.
Until you say, okay, we are doing this on this date.
It's like, a setting a date.
Yeah. And then there's this like, rush of adrenaline. You're like, fuck yeah! that happened this year. Because there's 14 interns at the Rep spread out through all the departments.
Yeah.
And a couple of us got to talking about wanting to produce something together.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked for months and months. And finally we were like, are we going to do this? Yes. And then so it's like, yes. Oh, my God. It's so exciting. Shit. We have so much to do.
Yep. Yep.
And then you just get working.
Yep. Yeah. Nothing like a hard deadline to inspire you.
Yeah. And you know you can't use, like, the excuse for homework, like, I thought I attached it to the email. Nope, someone's in a theater.
Yep. Okay, so where'd you go to college?
I went to St. Olaf College
uh-huh.
in Northfield, Minnesota.
Okay, so you, was that the first big move of your life? Like,
it was, yeah. I grew up in the same house.
Yeah.
Ballard. And I thought I wanted to go to school on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. I thought I wanted to go to a BFA program on the East Coast.
Yeah.
For acting.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, because I was still super acting focused at that point. I got to do, through the Children's Theater, two of their main stage shows while I was in high school. Mm-hmm. I did High School Musical in 2007. And
oh,
then,
get out of here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Big hit.
Yeah, I know.
And then Night of the Living Dead the following year in
2008. Oh, shit. Okay. Yeah.
I got to meet a ton of great people through both of those shows. So I was really serious about acting at that point. That's why, like, and this producing thing was, like, a new thing that was bubbling, but even directing that Xana Don't senior year was kind of like, yeah, sure, I'll direct this.
You just wanted to do it. They were, like, passion projects.
Director. Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
So I, you know, did the whole, like, BFA audition thing, and I didn't want to stay in Seattle, because I just wanted to go do something else.
Mm-hmm.
So I did the whole BFA audition thing, which was crazy.
Yeah.
And...
What did that mean? Like, did you go to, like, a...
Yeah,
I've heard of these conferences of, like...
Yeah, I didn't go to any of the conferences. I like, went around to... I basically, like, took a week off school, and because they all schedule them with, you know, around the same time for all the schools, and I was applying, like, all over the East Coast.
Yeah.
I basically just, like, drove around the East Coast with my parents. Bless them.
God,
and,
yeah.
And auditioned. And had my heart set on Boston University.
Mm-hmm.
Had a really good audition there.
Mm-hmm.
And just, like, had such good feelings about it that I didn't think very rational. Did not get in. Bad day.
Yeah.
Bad day for an 18-year-old. And I had applied to St. Olaf because one of my college, counselors, because that's a thing.
Yeah.
Is that a thing at most? I don't know.
Yeah, they, okay. Like, somebody just kind of...
Yeah.
Someone in high school to help you out?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But, like, since you prep is at college prep school,
yeah.
The college counselors are, like, the most amazing people in the world.
Cool.
Because they're like, we better do this job right.
Yeah.
And they do. so, anyway, one of my college counselors had just recently visited St. Olaf because they had never been there and they were trying to get to know more schools.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, Hattie, I know you're going to roll your eyes at me when I say this. I really think you should look at the school in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't even know where Minnesota is. Like, I'm so not interested in the Midwest.
Yeah.
And they were like, I know. They're like, I promise I would not say this to you if I did not really think it. So I applied kind of just to appease them.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like when push came to shove, I was looking... because I didn't get into any of the BFA programs I auditioned for.
Yeah.
Which was fucking rough, but, like, so great in retrospect.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had a couple schools I was, like, really considering that I'd been accepted to. And St. Olaf kind of rose to the top because it's a really good school academically.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I learned about their theater program, it was just really fantastic. And because they're just 45 minutes from the Twin Cities,
yeah.
Most of the professors in the department are working artists in the Twin Cities.
Oh, cool. Okay, great.
And the Twin Cities has an amazing theater scene.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about it, but it seems like a tight community.
Yeah, so that, I was like, I cannot believe I'm doing this, but I'm moving to Minnesota.
Yeah.
And I didn't visit at all. So I got on a plane with my mom.
So you're fresh.
In September.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we just flew and we were like, where are we going?
Yeah, you went to the Midwest.
Yep, I did it.
All
so,
right.
Yeah.
So you were in an acting program, like an acting major, I guess?
Well, because it's a liberal, okay. I cannot say this word. Liberal arts school. Yeah. That you just get a theater major.
Okay.
A Bachelor of Arts.
Yeah.
In theater. And, but naturally, like, if you're focused on certain things, you will do much more of that. But I had to take, you know, you're required to take acting, directing, mm-hmm. design classes, mm-hmm. Vectorworks, QLab.
Sure.
Woo.
Yeah.
So
it was like the kind of you do theater all day sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
and maybe
a psychology class. Well, that's the thing. It's like you're required to take theater classes all across the board,
mm-hmm.
but actually only about a quarter of your required classes are theater.
Yeah.
You have a lot of time to take other classes as well,
hmm.
which ended up being one of my favorite things about the school.
Yeah.
So I like to say I have an unofficial dance minor because I didn't do, like, the actual classes required for the dance major, but I took dance every single semester of college. And then I got a minor in management studies.
What does that mean?
It's like a fancy term for business, I guess.
Okay.
But basically, like, the classes I took, like, I had to take econ and accounting,
uh-huh.
And just, like, a general, like, for-profit management class, which was actually really awesome.
Yeah.
That's your producer brain at work. Exactly.
Somewhere.
And then I took, like, nonprofit arts management course and, like, did some independent studies.
Yeah.
So I did that because I knew this producing thing was of interest.
Yeah.
But then I took classes all over the board. Women's mm-hmm. studies, religion, all of it. Math class,
you took
chemistry.
You took chemistry.
Yeah, good. Yeah. That's the cool thing about going to a school like that.
Yeah.
And that's, like, why in the end not getting into those BFA programs, in retrospect,
was good for you.
All respect to my BFAers,
yeah.
included.
Yeah.
But, like, for me, the best thing that ever happened.
Yeah. That's awesome. So so it was a overall positive experience for you?
Very positive experience. I got to lead the student theater company for 3 years.
Oh my God.
Which was really awesome. Yeah, it was the kind of school where there were, you know, really legit professors. I had incredible professors. My directing professor and my main acting professor had both, you know, spent a lot of time at the Guthrie. Mm-hmm. My directing professor had been the artistic director at Arizona Theater Company.
Yeah. Wow.
So, really fantastic professors, but also, like, enough open space for you to jump on opportunities and create opportunities.
Cool.
So, yeah, I kind of, the student theater company was a thing, but it had some down years, so I pulled that back up out of the ashes a little bit.
Way to go.
And we started producing 5 to 7 shows. I think we produced, like, at least 7 shows each year I was there.
Get out of here. Yeah. And you had a pretty major hand in producing those shows?
Yeah, like, yeah. It was like, you know, people would apply to direct a specific show.
Yeah.
You know, and then we would support that process happening.
What kind of shows would you do? Like, new works?
It was, like, really what people wanted to do.
Yeah.
So it's awesome because it's college, so you're not like, oh, what actors do we have an age for, you know, that we can cast? You just do whatever you want. So, like, we did Sarah Kane's 448 Psychosis. I always want to say 1448 Psychosis. It's not the same thing.
It's a little heavier.
Yeah, like, we did that in this, like, awesome old building that had been, not abandoned, but, like, the offices that had been in there had been moved to a new building, so it was empty. You know, we did, like, Christopher Durang.
Yeah.
We did, I directed, and developed a new musical, like, a song cycle that went on and had life outside of St. Olaf, which was really amazing.
Oh, that's insanity.
Yeah, so we did kind of, like, stuff all over the place.
Cool.
And that's, you know, still going strong, which is really exciting.
Really?
Yeah.
So you kind of passed it off to the other kids,
yeah,
and they're taking it
Absolutely.
Over and rolling with it?
Yeah, and then I got to, like, my freshman year, I founded a, what do we call it? Like, I guess it was, like, a showcase for freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
So we got, like, 50 people. And the idea was that, I was like, there are so many people in this college who did theater in high school, because a ton of people did theater in high school, especially just, like, kind of the type of student that St. Olaf drew. But I understand that, like, in college, you have to start making choices about how you spend your time because you can't do everything. But I was like, I kind of want to see who's out there.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, this will be low time commitment. You just, you do, like, 1 or 2 songs, and then we get to see everyone. So we got about 50 people, got a student band, and it was all, like, contemporary musical theater.
Yeah.
Kind of modeled loosely around, again, Brandon Ivey's New Voices series that he does here in Seattle.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I've told him everything. And I just, like, have copied his career. He's chill with it.
You just gotta copy them careers you dig, man.
So, yeah, it was just, like, St. Olaf was great because there was so much opportunity to make things happen.
Yeah. So when did you leave the Midwest?
So then I graduated, and I was still, like, predominantly acting focused through all of college. Got to do a ton of great shows, and I graduated, and I decided to move to the Twin Cities.
Oh, okay. So you made it, you did some stuff out there.
And I just, like, I wanted to see what that was like. You know, I had come back to Seattle most summers during college, and, you know, kept teaching at the Children's Theater. I acted with Arts West. I did some other things.
Okay.
But I wanted to see what that whole scene was like and kind of build on my connections I had from college. So I came back for the summer after graduation and then moved back out there, and I had, like, nothing lined up. I had one choreography gig and that was it. And, like, my friend's family's restaurant hired me as a host, and I was just,
and then the life starts, the life begins.
But it was, like, it was a little desolate there for a while. But then things picked up. I got a grant to go back to St. Olaf and choreograph a show.
Oh, cool.
Show there, which was really fantastic. And I got hired on as the intern at the Playwright Center, which, if you don't know,
I do not know.
The Playwright Center is an incredible organization based. They did not pay me to say this. based in Minneapolis, and they're really a national organization, and it is completely playwright centric. So all they don't produce at all. All they do is they have, like, a ton of fellowships and memberships, and they provide resources for playwrights. Which, you know, for, like, kind of the the most outer circle of their members is, like, they have a really detailed online listing for submission opportunities that they compile and update almost daily. You know, they, like, send out weekly or monthly newsletters with, like, articles, and they have a really great website with a ton of resources.
Yeah.
They do classes. But then they have a bunch of different levels of, I guess, fellowships would be the best way to kind of encompass it. And they just workshop plays, essentially.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's really amazing. So a lot of the playwrights are not necessarily Minneapolis-based.
Yeah.
Some of them are, and some of their fellowships are, like, specifically for that or not for that. But they're just constantly workshopping plays.
Yeah.
And then some of the workshops result in public readings, which are always free.
Sure.
Yeah, and it's really incredible. So I interned there for 6 months, and it just kind of happened that some of the other interns weren't able to do the workshops that they were assigned, or they were busy with other things. So I ended up doing, like, at least 15 workshops, I think.
Wow. What would you do in the workshops?
So I would kind of, like, stage manage is the closest thing I could say to it.
Sure.
But, you know, really basic things, like photocopying the script, helping the playwright with script updates,
okay,
and tracking changes, you know, like general hospitality.
Yeah.
But then also I was kind of the liaison from the artist to the administration. So, you know, like, just got to do a lot of observation and navigation of, like, playwright-director relationships, which,
okay,
can be so fruitful in the workshop setting,
yeah,
but also really hard. And, you know, part of what the Playwright Center does is they're trying to match playwrights up with directors, you know, as potential collaborators down the road.
Can, like,
yeah,
further
or
each,
like,
other.
Yeah, and can lead to producing opportunities. So, you know, they'll, like, invite an artistic director from a company who they think, like, the company's aesthetic maybe fits with that playwright.
Yeah.
So, but, like, those relationships can be challenging sometimes, and
yeah,
sometimes the chemistry doesn't work out as you thought it would.
Sure.
So I got to, you know,
just kind of see that go
that
down. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I did that, did some teaching, and then I got the internship at Seattle Rep and
mm-hmm.
moved back here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what have you been working on? Oh, because I met you, I think at the opening of Chaos Theory.
Yeah.
At Annex. I
yeah.
think that's where I, like, knew who you were
yeah.
through, like, friends or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, Hattie. But you assisted with Michael Place for Bengal Tiger,
yeah.
right? That's,
yeah.
like, kind of the first project I knew you were working on. And probably the first work you were involved in that I saw.
Maybe, yeah. Because
yeah.
that was, like, that was that summer after I graduated when I came back to Seattle.
Okay.
Yeah, and I got to assist and direct Bengal Tiger.
Yeah.
At the Baghdad Zoo.
Yeah.
At Washington Ensemble Theater with Mikey Place. Yeah.
I really dug that show, by the way.
Yeah, that is, Rajiv Joseph is
he's
the
a beast.
Man.
He's a beast.
Oh, my gosh. His new play that has opened or is going to open in New York soon, I think at Manhattan Theater Project, Guards at the Taj,
uh-huh.
is incredible.
Cool.
Yeah. He just writes with such, like, pow. That's the word I use to describe it. You're just like, at some point, you're just like, holy shit, man.
Yeah.
This is deep.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I did that.
Mm-hmm.
I am assistant directing for Mikey again.
Yeah.
Right now. Dirty.
Yeah. With Washington Ensemble Theater
yeah.
as well. And that's a part of the ACT Lab situation?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Which is a really awesome opportunity for them and really exciting.
Do you guys get to rehearse at ACT?
Yeah.
Isn't that the coolest thing to rehearse at ACT?
I feel so badass. I'm just like, there's like millions of people like going into the theater to see all the amazing things that they have in their bajillion spaces.
Yeah.
And I'm just like walking and I'm like, I'm here for rehearsal.
Yeah.
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 You feel really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So when did because you do a lot of casting now, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You had to have been involved with it, with all your producing and directing
totally.
And all that stuff. But when was it kind of like, when did you start getting plugged into like, okay, I collect headshots
mm-hmm.
and then I bring people in and we see people? Like when,
yeah.
so more of the professional side of casting.
Totally. That really has just been this year
with
since
the rep.
Coming to the rep.
Yeah.
yeah. That has been, like, my first formal foray into the casting world.
Mm-hmm.
you know, of course, it comes with the territory of directing and sometimes producing. But yeah, this year has been a huge learning experience just for kind of how that whole machine works.
How do you dig casting?
I love it.
Isn't it? I haven't gotten to do too much of it, but I think I really like, I like casting. I like trying to find people who are right for roles.
Exactly. It's really cool because I think it's so, and like when I talk about actors, I don't mean it in a judgmental way because I consider myself an actor too. But I think it's so easy as actors to think of the casting person as the one that's making the decision about you.
Yeah.
Which, of course, like, depending on the director and depending on the theater and their position, like, they probably are sharing their opinion with the director to some degree. But really what the casting director or associate, in the case of Caitlin MacIntyre here at The Rep, their job is simply to advocate for you.
Yeah.
You know, like, and they do have power in the sense of getting you into the room.
Sure.
You know, depending on the director, some directors, especially if they're from out of town and it's a production that we're trying to cast locally, you know, they're just like, okay, give me a group of people. Let's hope I find the right person. So in terms of getting into the room, like, there is power, quote unquote. But it's really all about advocating. And the thing that I've really grown to love is just the relationships that you get to develop with people. And, like, I'm all for, you know, as much transparency as appropriate, because there shouldn't be secrets going into the audition. You know, like, the key to how to be successful. Because we want you to do well. And that sounds like such a, like, schmoozy, like, no, really, we want you to do well. But it's like, no, really, because if no one comes in and is right for this part, then we have not done our job well.
Yeah, we're fucked. We have no play, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Interesting.
So that's, like, the thing that I'm really enjoying about it is that, like, advocation and really helping people succeed.
Yeah. That's rad. So you also do... You explained it to me a little bit, some casting at Fifth Avenue, but with kids, right?
The Fifth Ave, I've just been helping out Kelsey Thorgelson, who's the casting associate there, just, like, with audition monitoring, which is its own fun game in itself. Really, it's, like, a glorified small talker, because you basically are just walking people from, like, point A to point B into the audition room and, like, keeping them company so they're not nervous. so I've done that, and then, I teach a lot, so I do work with kids in that capacity, but not at the Fifth Ave.
I kind of want to stay in this audition vein, because it's interesting to me, because, because it's by far the most, I just hated thing. I mean, people, I mean, I would talk with our peers all the time. It's just like how it's just this all-consuming pressure. I mean, I didn't do the TPS Generals this year just because I was like, I don't have time to prepare and I don't have time to stress about it. So, I mean, since you've been on the other side of the table in one of the bigger theaters in town, like what have you taken away that you could share with people and just be like, hey, here's some advice?
Well, since you mentioned the TPS Generals, that is actually kind of a great way to think about it, because I had the extreme honor of getting to attend the TPS Generals this year.
Yeah. But it is a bit of a marathon.
I
mean,
it's a huge marathon.
Yeah.
Just because you're watching so many auditions back-to-back there, and there's not, like, you know, people aren't auditioning for a specific show or even a specific theater or season. You really see the full range, and it becomes quickly apparent what the small yet general things are you can do to really kind of put yourself in the yes category.
Yeah.
Rather than, it's not even a no category, it's just the forgettable category. So, can I give you my bullet point list?
Okay. Let's hear it. That's what we want.
This is like, this is 101, so it is not meant to be condescending at all. It's just, I know as an actor, I forget that there are these small important things. Slate.
Yeah.
Slate, and of course it's different. At TPS, highly important, because if you only have 2 minutes... That's 10, or depending on what your slate is, 30 extra seconds that we get to see you as someone on the stage. We learn everything we need to know about your vocal capabilities in that slate. If I can't understand what you're saying, I'm already tuned out.
Yeah.
So the slate is really important, and you know, there's this weird balance in terms of personality. Like, you don't want to seem forced or over the top, but we want to see you confident, we want to see you open, and we want to see you know that you know who you are, and grounded in that. That's so complicated.
I know,
just
but it's
say,
like,
hi, my name is.
But it's also like, I mean, as actors, we're so used to, I mean, people, we play characters, and so to come out here and say, I am Andy Bufflin. Yeah. This is who I am. Like, that can be like the hardest thing to do, and to just stand there and live in yourself in front of dozens of people who are essentially interviewing you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, and you know, like they say, you know, practice your slate with your pieces, like as if it's a part of your pieces.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah.
Because you think you're like, well, the slate I got, like, let's see if I can remember the Shakespeare. And then you walk in and you're like, my name is Addie Andrus. You're like, and I will be doing, who's the playwright? You know, William Shakespeare. So slate, it's really important.
Yeah.
Especially in those TPS auditions.
Well, and it's like the one opportunity for you to be you.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and show kind of like your... What is neutral, I say in quotes, because that's a tricky term for you, and then where do you go to in your pieces? Which is a great segue into my next bullet point. Piece selection. This is my new big thing.
Okay.
Because, I mean, there's, like, the usual stuff, like, don't do stuff that's too overdone, which is tricky. And, you know, honestly, if it's a really, really good audition piece, I don't actually care how many times I hear it in a day.
Yeah.
It's when it's not and people are still doing it, every other person, I'm like, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
It's not even helping you. But the thing about material selection that actually I'm really excited about when I'm on the other side of the casting table is that it gives me an opportunity to see how you identify yourself as an actor.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of characters are you drawn to? What kind of writing? You know, what genre? What style?
Yeah.
Are you drawn to, or do you perceive yourself to be good at?
Yeah, yeah.
And then what, in terms of contemporary work, first of all, are you actually doing contemporary, as in, like, written in the last 5-7 years?
Yeah.
Or is your contemporary piece from 1995?
Are you doing, like, Yeah.
Which
sure.
is, like, fine, because, like, I love me some Paula Vogel, so...
Yeah, you know.
It's not to say that, like, oh, those writers are old school and boring at all, but if you bring something in that, at least one of your pieces that was written in the past 5 years...
Mm-hmm.
That just shows me that you are reading American Theater Magazine.
You're reading plays.
You know?
Yeah.
You are doing your part to stay a part of this community at large as it progresses. And also, you know, like, on a more direct level in terms of material choice, and this is, like, my opinion, I know it is shared by some, and I don't know how others feel about it, but I don't really... care about seeing women do pieces about, like, my boyfriend or my husband. Like, I would love to hear women talk about something else, and I know it's hard to find that material, but if you dig, it's there. I don't really care about hearing men being like, oh, that bitch is hot.
But that's my favorite piece. I'll have to get rid of that one.
Or just being like a misogynist asshole, because even though I know that is a character, you still chose that piece. Like, out of all the bajillion monologues in the world, you still chose that piece.
You chose the asshole
And I
piece.
Know there are, in fact, other pieces. And you can still be an asshole, because if that's something you're really good at, like, I would love to know that, because there are asshole characters to be cast. But you don't have to be a misogynist asshole.
Yeah.
Even though there are those characters to be cast, I'm going to assume you can act your way into that one.
Well, and there's, I mean, it's important to, I think, to find something a little more complex than that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because there are masculine characters who fucking, whatever, have daddy issues or are dealing with X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
That kind of added another layer to it.
Totally.
I mean, Bengal Tiger is a prime example of masculine characters dealing with some fucked up shit because of war or like mental health.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
So just kind of like staying away from those gender stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like totally a personal thing. I'm sure there are people who don't care about that.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, that's something, like, as I watch more auditions that I'm finding out about. So okay. Material selection.
So we got the slate.
Material selection. Which the sidebar to that is keep reading plays.
Yeah.
Find playwrights that you like. Another sidebar is that I'm thinking in the at least 700 auditions I've seen in the past few months.
Mm-hmm. 700 auditions?
Yeah. Well, because we did TPS generals and then we did rep generals.
Then you did the rep. Yep. You told me about the
rep. So I think that I have seen, in my recollection, one guy do his two pieces that were both written by women.
Huh.
Not to say that you need to, if you're a man, you have to do pieces written by women. Like, I think you should.
But what is that, I mean, for you personally, what does that do to you when you see a man do that?
Well, when I saw that man, it totally popped out to me because not even women usually do pieces written by two women. There are more women who do it than men, of course, but it's another way to showcase a playwright and just kind of be a player in the larger ecology of theater.
Yeah.
And let's be real, we need more showcasing for women playwrights.
Yeah, this is something that...
And, you know, like, if you do a piece by a woman as a man, especially, you are, on some level, taking on a viewpoint other than your own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if the character is written from a similar viewpoint that you... I mean, you're playing a man still.
Yeah.
But, yeah, huh. I don't know. That's just, like, that's an observation. Yeah. I'll let everyone interpret that as they will.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just, like, had that realization after I watched all these auditions.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of crazy?
Yeah, no. I mean, it's, when you go through that many things, I mean, is this, these bullet points that you, is this stuff that you picked up from casting directors you've worked with, or is this just kind of your own style, just, like as you've seen...
This is
how hundreds of actors doing stuff. This is stuff that you've kind of picked up for yourself.
This is like my observations synthesized with conversations with Caitlin McIntyre mostly, just because we work so closely together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bullet point number three, kind of boring, but dress appropriately.
Okay.
Wear something that is, good with your body.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something that you're comfortable in.
Yeah.
And you know, like, actually, I think guys are a great example because you think you have less choices, but some men look really comfortable in, like, a button-up dress shirt and tie and slacks.
Sure.
And some look really comfortable, and I mean comfortable in a good way, not, like, lazy, but, like, in your own skin, in a t-shirt and jeans.
That's sort of what I...
Yeah.
I mean, in my school, we were prepped to be, like, dress nice. We had to come in with our, like, outfit and be like, this is what you're going to wear.
Yeah.
And for me, it's just kind of died down. Not, I wouldn't say died down, but just shifted into that, into the comfortable, but stylish.
Exactly.
But, like, just, I mean, comfort is...
Like, the
being able to relax in your own skin...
Exactly.
Just, like, will allow you to shine through.
And I love the phrase, like, you on your best day.
Sure. Yeah.
Not you on your wedding day. You on your best day. Like, what is best for you?
Yeah.
Because I see so many guys come in their, like, bright blue button-up and black tie, and I'm like, dude, you do not look comfortable.
You look all
and
stiff.
Then you're doing, like, a Stephen Adley Gurgis piece. Like, no Stephen Adley Gurgis character wears a blue button-up and a black tie.
What do you think of people dressing for character? I've totally done this before.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, subtly.
Yeah,
subtly.
Like not necessarily, like, if I'm... I don't know.
Yeah. Like, no, I had someone come into... A View from the Bridge auditions for the role of Catherine. And that person, I have only seen them in general auditions or, like, in readings or just around town.
Yeah.
And they have, like, a very awesome, cool, funky alternative style. And they had, like, their hair pulled back, like, straightened, like, red lipstick, just, like, classic A-line dress.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally did not recognize them.
Wow.
But that's, like, where, you know, like, a little essence of the character is so great because I see you in a new light.
Yeah.
And it, in a way that is supported by the material that you're doing, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the same is, like, back to my suit and tie example.
Yeah.
Like, if we're auditioning for a role that's, like, very blue collar or just someone, like, super grounded and earthy, like, that's not gonna, that's kind of almost like a shield.
Sure.
That I have to look through.
Yeah.
To see the character.
Huh.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, what's in the future for Hattie? What you got on your plate right now?
Right now, I am, as you know, directing for Live Girls for Quickies.
Oh my gosh!
What?
I did know this because I'm in your play.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
We're having a good time.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. So we got that going on.
Mm-hmm.
When is that open? June 6th?
Yeah, week after next, I think.
Yeah. I'm super excited that we're going to be at Annex for that.
Yes.
Great space.
Fucking love Annex.
So.
Annex shout out.
Annex.
Annex.
Hashtag.
Just yell hashtag.
Yeah. Makes it all better. So we got Live Girls coming up.
Uh-huh.
Just finished 1448 mixtape.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You acted in it.
Yes.
Cool.
I got to put on the acting pants, as I say, which was awesome.
Yeah.
Been too busy to do that. They have another weekend coming up.
I saw it last night, and it was it was wonderful. There's some fucked up pieces in it, though.
Yeah.
There's some fucked up shit, but it was a lot of fun. Who is your director?
Tyrone Brown.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure, sure.
Who I hadn't gotten to work with before
cool.
at all, so that was really exciting.
Yeah.
So we have 1448 kind of in the past and the future.
Yeah.
For shout outs. Quickies. And then I am assistant directing Dirty.
Yeah.
Which will open on June 12th mm-hmm. at ACT. Check that out. Hashtag Washington Ensemble.
Woo!
And then I am in pre-production for a production with U Theater Northwest out on Mercer Island that I'll be directing.
Oh, okay.
The House at Pooh Corner.
Oh, yeah.
Woo!
You going into the 100-acre woods?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, girl.
So I'm super stoked for that.
Yeah.
And that's all kids, of course, and we're going to have a great time. That goes up this summer.
Yeah.
And then the Writers Group Showcase here at The Rep.
Jeez,
I'll be
Louise.
Helping produce.
Yeah.
And that starts June 12th as well and runs 2 weekends. 8 world premiere readings.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
By some badass playwrights.
Yeah. Courtney Meeker.
Fuck yeah.
Karen Hartman. Holly Arsenault. Brandon Healy. Brian Willis.
That's so
rad. I'm missing
the
other ones, but they're all awesome. Josh Bierman. So that's going to be really exciting. And then
your list just
I'm
goes.
I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And then, okay, I think this is the last thing for now. One Coast Collaboration.
Yes.
OCC.
Yeah.
Which is a play development festival.
Mm-hmm.
In its 6th year, helmed by Mikey Place, I call him, like, my soul sister producer, collaborator. I don't know. We're still working on the title.
Yeah.
But we just love making things happen together.
Cool.
The festival will be a little earlier this year than usual, in July.
Mm-hmm.
So we're prepping for that.
Yeah.
We're partnering with Washington Ensemble Theater, the mm-hmm. Satori Group, Intimon.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, really excited
Making
about
stuff
that.
Happen. I love the idea of all these just amazing theater companies coming together to produce work. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I love it.
And
I
really
dig it.
like planting seeds.
I mean,
sometimes playwrights will bring plays they've been working on and are more in the refining stage, but I get so excited about the projects where they just show up with an idea
mm-hmm.
and go from there.
Yeah.
And of course, you're not going to get super far in the process in 5 days, but knowing that it like started there is just so incredible.
Yeah. So that's all those sound amazing in the very near future. Do you have a grand vision for your direction? Because I mean, you seem you could go any number of ways. Do you think about that, or do you kind of just stay present and take the projects that you dig as they come? Like, what's your?
I like go back and forth between those two things. With no rhyme or reason, really, except my own brain. But I think, I would really like to get back to acting a little more.
Yeah.
Because that just hasn't been the time priority in the past 2 years. So I'm going to try and leave some space for that
mm-hmm.
as I continue down the road. I think grad school is a couple years in the future.
Okay.
Most likely I will go for directing.
Yeah.
Because that kind of bridges that producer gap, and there are always acting opportunities to link in just once you're at grad school,
mm-hmm.
Projects to jump onto. And I think that way down the road, I think I want to be an artistic director.
Yeah?
I think that's where, like, the things that really get me excited, where they combine most clearly for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like just a point of logic.
Yeah.
Which is, like, a big goal for logic.
But I think, I don't know.
Yeah, but it just kind of feels like that's where it would all culminate.
Yeah, well, it feels like that you're well on your way to doing that
kind
of stuff. Are there any projects that you just, just name one. What's a project that you really got to sink your teeth into, whether it's a producing or directing gig or a acting gig? Mm-hmm. What's something that's always been on your head that you want to knock out at some point?
Ooh.
These are Katie Woodzik field questions.
Okay. That's good. I don't really, I don't necessarily have, a bucket list or anything like that, per se. Mm-hmm. But this is kind of generic. Maybe this is a cop-out, you can tell me. But I danced a ton in college.
Yeah.
And that's another thing I need to get back to.
You've got so many hats to put on and off.
But I danced in a modern dance company all 4 years of college.
Yeah.
And I had some really great peers and collaborators. And we always dreamed of working on more dance theater projects.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big thing that I have to work up the courage and the brain power and all of it to do.
Yeah.
And I don't really have anything specific in mind yet, but I think that really visual storytelling is so exciting to me. There's a company in Minneapolis, the Flying Foot Forum, that did a piece about the Bosnia-Serbia conflict that was produced at the Guthrie a couple years ago called Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so impactful to me.
Yeah.
So I think that's like the down the road challenge I have for myself.
Start crossing genres.
Yeah.
Making stuff happen.
That's where the good stuff happens.
Do you have any advice for anybody just trying to do this dance with us, trying to play this game? What's worked for you in your story of doing theater?
Yeah. Honestly, I think just hard work and dedication.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and patience, because talking this past hour, I'm like, damn, my life sounds fun. But on the day to day, it is. I mean, it's always exciting, but it's also a grind. It's monotonous.
It's time-consuming.
It's tiring. It's frustrating. There's still a lot of rejection involved.
Yeah,
very time-consuming. But I have found that if you trust the universe and keep working hard, things continue to link together.
Yeah.
And you just never know what is going to lead to what.
Yeah.
I mean, it is really crazy. If I hadn't gone to St. Olaf, then I wouldn't have met my professor, Gary Gisselman. I wouldn't have done the internship at the Playwright Center without him. I honestly probably wouldn't have gotten the rep internship without my internship at the Playwright Center.
Yeah.
And then we wouldn't be right here.
Yeah.
In the Seattle Repertory Theater.
Doing a little interview.
So you just, stay. It's like that weird balance between staying in the moment with the opportunities you have and really excelling at those.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do work my ass off, and I pride myself on that. And I think people recognize that. And things will sometimes lead directly into other things. And other times they will not.
Yeah.
Till 5 years later. Or also maybe never.
But you never know.
But you never know. Just got to keep going.
Yeah. How you feel? You feel all right?
Yeah, I feel good.
All right, cool. Thanks for talking. I feel good. This was fun.
I feel like we hashtagged, which was probably good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't swear too much, did I?
I don't fucking know.
Fuck that.
All right. Thank you for talking to me, Hattie.
Thanks, Andy.